Welcome to Walking on the Wild Side, a podcast dedicated to exploring the flora and fauna of the Southeast and instilling in you, our listeners, an appreciation and admiration for the beauty and diversity of our natural resources. As always, I'm with my wife, Gabrielle, who through all of our adventures has become quite the naturalist herself. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Walking on the Wild Side. It's time for another episode, and for this episode, I'm once again going to be flying solo. Gabrielle and I both are traveling quite a bit, and it's really difficult to try and get together for doing a podcast. So she's traveling all around for work and, of course, going up to Ohio for Mother's Day, and then she comes back, and I take off and go on a work trip. So I'm flying solo today, but I will tell you, it's a great time to be doing a podcast because everything is just busting out. And I'm sitting out here on the back porch, a.k.a. the podcast studio, and nature is just busting out all around me here. But I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of having to do a little battle here left and right. First, we started off, it was battling carpenter bees because they're trying to attack the rafters of our new porch. And once I was able to get that under control, then we had some eastern phoebes that were attempting to make a nest up here. And they were bringing in just gobs and gobs of red clay and mud trying to make a nest. And I tried to give them an alternate nesting platform to use, but they decided to go elsewhere. And I thought, okay, I can probably relax a little bit. And then lo and behold, I go to sit on the couch here, and there's the beginnings of a nest. The Carolina wrens have decided they wanted to try and build a nest in between the cushions of our couch out here on the back porch. So, my goodness gracious, I guess everyone likes our porch out here, but that's okay. That's nature, and it'd be a lot different if we didn't have anything like that around. So I'm fine with coaxing them to go somewhere else. Of course, I'm never going to do anything like spray them or anything along those lines like the carpenter bees or do anything detrimental to the phoebes or the Carolina wrens, but they have a sense of urgency, and they need to nest. So if we dissuade them long enough, they'll find a safer place to nest, and I think that's exactly what they're doing. But the one thing I will say is they have arrived. What am I talking about when I say they have arrived? The periodic cicadas, and boy, they have come out en masse. Now, they're not everywhere. There are probably some places on maps that show you that you're probably supposed to be in the area. You may not be seeing them yet. But I will tell you what, in our area here, we're in Chester, South Carolina. So we're in kind of like the upper kind of slightly western part of South Carolina, or just mainly the northern part of South Carolina. And where I work out here at our house and everything, boy, these cicadas have come out, and in the last week they seem to have really started to peak. They're fluttering everywhere from tree to tree, and they're making their low hum noise. They are all calling at the same time, and the results can be literally deafening. In fact, where I work, I can hear them outside from inside the building. And then when I go out and do some work out in the woods and stuff, holy cow, it is just a constant hum of these cicadas. And it's extremely noticeable. I mean, I hear the regular cicadas kind of in their high-pitched calls and stuff like that. But then there's always, it seems like it's just always just constant low hum. And for some people, that can be very distracting and almost kind of annoying, but I mean, it only happens every 13, 17 years, depending on what brood you're listening to. So it's actually pretty cool. So I figured, you know, why not do a podcast just on the periodic cicada themselves? Now, we've done a podcast on cicadas before and talked about them a little bit. So this is going to be a little bit of a rehash, but I really feel like we should talk about the periodic cicadas because it's such an unusual event. And there's quite a few species of these 13 and 17-year cicadas. But we'll talk a little bit about that today, and we're also going to talk about how they make the noise and why 13 and 17 years. That seems so odd. You know, what kind of strategy is that? Why is that beneficial to these insects? So let's talk about them. But I think if any of you are in that brood range and you kind of know where I'm talking about, you can go online, and I'll share that on our website and stuff, a line where you can look at some of the brood emergences and stuff. And this year, it happens to be in our area that we're starting to see it. In 2025, I think New Jersey's under the gun. I think they're going to have them. But they divide these periodic cicadas into broods. And it's kind of crazy. All these broods themselves are synchronized. And when I say synchronize, it means they all emerge at the same time. The annual cicadas, you know, the ones that can come out every year, when they start hatching, their broods are not synchronized, so they can come out, you know, 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, whatever. So that means you pretty much get emergences of these cicadas, and they call them annual cicadas, pretty much every year. But these 13-year and 17-year cicadas, their broods are synchronized. That's why you have them come out en masse, and that's still a mystery to science as to how they can actually plan and synchronize those broods. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. But the interesting thing is, cicadas can be found all over the world, but annual cicadas, you know, they can be found all over the place. The periodic cicadas are only found in eastern North America, and there's like seven species. I think there's probably four of them that are 13-year and three of them that are 17-year species. The 17-year ones are actually more northern in distribution-wise, but the 13 is kind of our area, eastern, southern, and a little bit west. So there's only a very small area where the 13 and the 17-year both emerge. And that's what the big deal is this year, is the 17 and the 13 will emerge simultaneously. Now, we don't have around South Carolina and stuff, we don't have any 17-year cicadas, so it's not going to be an issue for us. But in that little small area where the 17 and the 13, I think it only happens every couple hundred years, and I think it's not going to happen for another 200 years when the 13 and 17 emerge simultaneously. So that's what's so interesting about it now, but it's still kind of cool for all these 13 years to be coming out now here around South Carolina. The interesting thing for me about them is that the periodical cicadas, they're divided into three species groups, and they all have kind of slight differences and stuff, but the genus of all these is called Magicicada. I think that is the most awesome scientific name, Magicicada. That couldn't be more appropriate, because it's still, you know, unknown to science as to how exactly this synchronization starts. So it is magic, and so that's a perfect name for that. But like I said, they're all divided into broods, and because they are synchronized, they're easily predictable, so they know when these broods are going to emerge, you know, for many years, and I think that's kind of cool. The funny thing is, because of these emerging cicadas, many people used to refer to them as locusts, and locusts, they're not cicadas. They're more like grasshoppers. All right, so, but the cicadas themselves, a lot of times, were confused, and so when they came out en masse in some of these brood cycles and stuff, that's when people said it was like a plague of locusts. They were probably getting it confused. I think even one of the years, a 13-year cicada emergence happened, and Bob Dylan, I believe, wrote a song, but it was the Day of the Locust, so he kind of misidentified what it was. It was not locusts, it was the cicadas, but they talk about that was what triggered that song, which I thought was kind of interesting as well. So the cool thing about it, though, is these things do emerge en masse, and it's a really cool reason as to why they do that, and it's actually kind of a survival adaptation by these animals and stuff. But if you see them, you'll know them. They're about an inch and a half long. Their back is kind of black. Their wings are transparent, but they have golden veins, and their eyes are a piercing red color. And it's really cool because the noise they make is a lower pitch than the annual cicada, so it's almost like a hum. And when you pick one up, it'll actually vibrate in your hand and make that hum, which is kind of interesting as well, because I think it's kind of cool to feel that. And you imagine if you're a predator and you go to pick one up and it buzzes and makes that noise, it can startle you enough to allow that cicada to go away. But again, we're going to go back to that, and we're going to chat more about the reason why they're doing that, and why that's such a kind of a neat adaptation for survival. And going back talking about those red eyes just for a second, it's interesting because those red eyes aren't red for the entire 13 years. It's actually the eyes start to turn red the fall before they emerge. So they emerge in the spring. So from fall to spring, their eyes turn red. And then when they emerge, they have those brilliant red eyes. So how does all this start? You know, what is the life cycle of a cicada? And it's the same whether it's annual or it's a periodical, is they mate in the female. He uses an ovipositor. If you guys remember, an ovipositor is actually an egg-laying device that in wasps and bees and hornets, it's modified into a defensive stinger. So the cicada themselves use that ovipositor. They make a little slit in like a tree branch or a tree stem or something, or plant stem, and then they lay eggs. And they can lay like 400 or 600 eggs through a variety of different trees and stuff. But then these things hatch, and these little babies crawl down into the soil about a foot and a half to 2 feet into the soil, and they'll find tree roots, and they'll attach themselves to tree roots, and then they'll suck on the juices of those tree roots. Now, it can, if there's a ton of these nymphs that go to one tree, it can affect little young trees, but for the most part, it doesn't affect the tree too much. And of course, as you can see, we've got forest all around us. And if you've been around where you've seen the emergence and seen the hundreds of thousands of these insects that are emerging, it hasn't affected the trees too much. So they will stay there. And in the case of the annual cicada, they'll stay there and then they'll emerge each, I'd say probably every 2 to 3 years. But it's staggered because, like I said, they're not synchronized. So the nymphs will crawl out using those digging claws, cling to the side of the building. Then they'll split their exoskeleton, and then the males and the female adults will fly around and start making their noise to try and attract a female to mate and start the cycle all over again. Now, with the periodic cicada, you know, it'll take 13 years to 17 years for them to stay underground and then emerge in mass. And as you can imagine, too, remember I talked about how they burrow around in the soil, the annual cicadas, these periodic cicadas do the same thing. They burrow around in the soil. Now, they don't move around much. They just kind of stay in the same area and everything, but that's kind of interesting that they don't move around a lot. However, I'll talk about this in just a little bit. That actually may be a key toward how they know when to emerge. But, you know, the bad thing about it, when you think about it, you think it's pretty safe being in the ground, but a 13-year cicada and them all emerging at one time, guess what kind of issue that causes? Think about all the pesticide drenches that people use for soil, the soaks they use for a lot of the grubs and things like that. All that can negatively affect the cicadas. So you can imagine one brood killed off at one time, that could affect the entire cycle of all these cicadas and stuff. Now, as they complete this life cycle and become adults, after they've kind of molted from that nymphal skin into an adult, the wings harden and the exoskeleton hardens and everything, and then they actually will fly into the nearest trees and they'll actually start making that mating noise. And it's interesting, every species of cicada has a different pitch, a different pattern, so they can discern themselves. So when you got all these different species of cicadas, they're like frogs. They find their own sound, and that's what attracts the males and females by specific species themselves. So that's pretty cool. But why in the world do they come out in mass? Remember, we were talking about this and saying there's got to be a reason why they come out in mass. Well, it's actually a survival mechanism, because when they emerge, these 13-year cicadas, they come out by the hundreds of thousands, even the millions. And I know that sounds like hyperbole, but it's very true. There are millions of them around, and anything that is a meat eater eats these cicadas. I mean everything. Foxes, coyotes, bobcats, raccoons, possums, birds, spiders, ants eat the dead ones. I mean, they provide so much food in their emergence. It's incredible. But here's the funny thing about it, right? There's so many of them that come out, there's no way that all of them can be eaten. And that in itself is that survival mechanism. It's actually called predator satiation is kind of the term that's used. I mean, it's kind of almost like the only restaurant you got in town and you eat at every night, and finally you just get so tired of the restaurant, you just start cooking at home. That's kind of the way that works. But they get tired of eating all these cicadas, or they just eat them and eat them and eat them and eat them, that they just kind of, they're satiated with them and they can't eat any more of them. Well, that's the mechanism. There's so many of them out there that it ensures their survival. Also, there are no animals that count on them year to year to emerge. If you had some animals that came out every year, these animals would adapt their life cycles and adapt their migration and everything for that type of food. Well, they stay underground 13 and 17 years, so really no animals have a life cycle adapted to their emergence. So that's also a really kind of a cool way that they avoid predation, is just being so periodic with 13 to 17 years that really nothing depends on them. And when they do bust out and come out, it's just like an extra added benefit, but no animal has adapted to depend upon them for food and sustenance. So I thought that was kind of an interesting point to make as well for these cicadas. The interesting thing about the sound they make, it can actually be to the point where it can be damaging to human ears, painful, and the noise is so loud. Well, that also, that deters birds and other things from eating them because of that noise. So their sound is actually kind of a deterrent for predation as well. And speaking of the sound, you know, they don't make their sound like crickets, grasshoppers, katydids and stuff make theirs. So that's actually called stridulation. And Gabrielle loves that term. If you guys have heard her in the past, she loves stridulation. Stridulation is where they have a rasp and a file on separate structures, whether it be legs, body, or whether it be wings, and it makes a scratching, you know, sound, and that's what makes the noise for crickets and things along those lines, like the snowy tree cricket, which is, you know, maybe this is a sidebar, but it's fascinating. The number of chirps can help you predict the temperature based on the number of chirps per minute, so that's kind of cool. But those chirping sounds that they make are usually made by wings or legs. The cicada is completely different. Cicada has what's called a timbal, which is like almost like a clear, transparent, almost like a window in its abdomen. But I would just say it's a structure that looks almost like an eardrum, an external eardrum on some insects, but it's not an eardrum. If you think about it, those little toys you used to get, which are like a little half-rounded little rubber cup, and you flip it, and when it flexes back, it pops up straight up in the air. Well, think of it like that as the way it moves, you know, up and down and up and down. These have ridges on them, and when they make that pop, they make that unique sound, that unique noise that is specific to, like I said, each species of cicada. And when you make that go, it's actually controlled by muscles in the abdomen that are attached directly to this timbal, and it vibrates it back and forth, popping it in and out, in and out, in and out, and that's what makes the noise. But, you know, not only is the synchronization puzzled scientists, they don't know, also scientists don't understand how that structure can make that loud of a noise. It's one of the loudest noises in the animal kingdom. It's just fascinating, and it's all happening right in our own backyard. And speaking of that noise, I was actually down in the woods and had my recorder with me, and I recorded it. So for some of you who have told me that you're not able to hear it and stuff, this is just a short snippet of that loud, loud calling. Check it out. So it is kind of interesting that they don't understand the whole synchronization, and they also don't understand the noise itself. But if you reach down and pick up one of these insects, it'll vibrate in your hand, and it'll make that loud noise, and it can startle. It absolutely can startle a predator. But that being said, animals aren't the only ones that eat cicadas. Humans do too. And they're actually, you can look all over the internet if you want to, and I'm not going to be one of those that's going to do this, but people eat cicadas. They actually will saute them, or they'll cook them. And because they're arthropod, they're crustaceans, right? Even though they're insects, they're related to all these crustaceans. Some people say they taste like shrimp. I've heard one that actually said the taste is like canned asparagus. I don't think that's a promotion for the flavor myself. I think that's not good. But a lot of people do eat cicadas. And the interesting thing about that is they do not transmit disease, and they're very clean animals. So they're safe to eat. Now, obviously, I wouldn't eat anything raw like that, because anything raw would be a dangerous to eat. But a lot of people do. And if you are so inclined and you want to do this, I'll post a couple of recipes for cicadas. And if you want to go outside and pluck a few off a tree while they're still emerging, knock yourself out. That is not something I'm going to be doing anytime soon. I can grant you that. Now, I had told you earlier that those little cicadas kind of attaching themselves to the tree roots may actually be a key as to how they know to emerge every 13 and 17 years. Well,
You know, when a plant grows, of course, it grows heavy in the spring and throughout the summer, and then in the fall and winter it goes dormant. So it's like almost a cycle of active and dormant, active and dormant. Scientists think that somehow these cicadas are able almost to count. Now, that's kind of anthropomorphic, but they're able to kind of estimate and count the years, and then it triggers them all to emerge, right? So a period of like 13 active and dormant cycles just by sucking the juice of these plants, you know, obviously the flow gets slower and gets faster in the spring and summer. So they're estimating basically 13 years. And then scientists think that that's actually one of the ways that they know how to emerge. God, that's fascinating. Cicadas count? Come on, guys. You can't make this stuff up, right?
Even though they emerge every 13 to 17 years, some get confused and they'll either come out before or after when they're supposed to come out. These little guys, they come out maybe at year 12, or maybe they come out year 14, or maybe they come out at year 16, or they come out at year 18. These are called stragglers, right? Because their timing is just a little bit off. It doesn't happen a lot. It happens a little bit, but it does happen. And so sometimes you'll see around lights and stuff like that, you'll see a periodic cicada. Usually it's just one or two most at the max. You don't see a bunch of them. But now when you get into that 13-year cycle, that 17-year cycle, my gosh, I was going to work the other day and there were hundreds of them laying on the ground right outside the building. Obviously, they were attracted to the lights themselves. So what you've got is these amazing humming noises. You've got this emergence that you just see them fluttering through the trees. They are not dangerous, right? Cicadas cannot sting and cicadas cannot bite us, so they're not dangerous to us. But there is one group of folks out there that it does pose a danger to this time of year, and that would be the people that ride motorcycles without helmets. Because you can imagine taking one of those cicadas, and sometimes when they're moving across roads and stuff like that, it can be pretty painful. And maybe some of you guys out there that ride motorcycles without helmets, you're probably inadvertently tasting cicadas as well. So, you know, if I was you guys, I would probably recommend that you need to, if you can, this time of year for the next probably 3 weeks or so, just go ahead and wear a helmet and save yourself a lot of smacks in the face and kind of crunchiness in your mouth and teeth. That's kind of nasty thinking about that. So that's pretty much all I have about the cicadas in themselves. I mean, it's kind of an amazing year that we've had, right? We've had like a partial, in some areas, had a full eclipse. We've also had the cicadas emerging. Just last night, believe it or not, you were able to see the northern lights due to all the solar storms and things that are happening. So it's really, truly just a 2024 is a unique year. So I would just pay attention to other stuff that's happening. I mean, if all this stuff is happening like it's happening, I would even say that, you know, if there's a meteor shower, man, I'd get outside and look at it, because 2024 is already spectacular. You never know. We could add to it with a meteor shower or anything else that's happening. I'm tickled to death because 2024 has led to Otis and Gracie, our screech owl pair that we've got out there, which is pretty fascinating. And I have seen Otis come a couple of times bringing food to Gracie. And when I looked at it through my binoculars, guess what he's feeding Gracie? Cicadas. So even our screech owls are taking advantage of the wonderful thing. So, you know, and again, don't be annoyed by the sound. You know, get out there and listen to it. It's something that only happens every 13 years or 17 years, and it's amazing to hear. Go out there and look in the trees and check these things out and look at them. You can pick them up and hold them. They're not going to hurt you, but they really are a gorgeous insect and just one of the true mysteries of nature. But I will tell you this, the only way you're going to see those cicadas is if you get outside and walk on the wild side.